This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The economic focus is on putting people back to work.
So is the idea of free trade a problem or a solution?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Adrienne Hill. And for Jeremy Hobson, it's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today's Tuesday, September 6th.
Well, coming up, let's say today is Election Day 2012. What will the jobless rate be?
The U.S. needs jobs, but which ideas could actually work?
And later, one guy thinks selling jokes in Central Park will do for now.
His story and others ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The American economy will limp along, but avoid recession. That today, according to World Bank President Robert Zoellick. Speaking in Singapore, Zoellick said slow growth and high unemployment are likely to continue for some time.
One idea to create jobs that's getting attention from both parties is free trade. President Obama has championed it before. Plus, today, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce released its job plan that also asks the president to push through trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama.
Marketplace's Amy Scott is with us now to check whether free trade actually means more jobs. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Now, there's some thought that the president will talk about these deals in his job speech on Thursday before Congress. Do these agreements tend to produce jobs, Amy?
Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says these agreements would protect 380,000 jobs. Other economists say they tend not to create jobs, or at least they don't create as many as are lost. But I spoke this morning with Jeffrey Wood, an economics professor at Cass Business School in London. He says jobs aren't really the point of a free trade agreement.
We shouldn't think of it simply in terms of job creation. Some jobs will vanish and some jobs will come about. What it will do is make people better off.
Make people better. Okay, how is that?
Well, by making goods cheaper and more available. But of course, there are other concerns about free trade agreements, like human rights abuses, environmental abuses. It's not just about shipping jobs overseas.
These deals have already been negotiated with the countries. Why the delay, Amy?
Well, of course, Congress has had a lot on its plate. But in an opinion piece in yesterday's Washington Post, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell blamed President Obama for stalling. The president has to introduce these in Congress. And McConnell says Republicans have agreed to the kinds of protections for workers that might have blocked them from passing.
All right. Marketplace's Amy Scott reporting this morning. Amy, thank you.
You're welcome.
For another take on the jobs picture, Georgetown economist Harry Holzer joins us now. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning.
So when we're talking about job creation, what ideas are out there right now?
There's really two strands. There are things that will put more money in the hands of consumers to stimulate general demand. And there's also ideas to more directly create more jobs, either in the public or the private sector. So, for instance, in the latter category, you'd put things like an infrastructure bank, or certain kinds of tax credits to employers that create jobs, whereas in the first category, things like extending the payroll tax cut that was enacted last year.
And which of these plans and ideas can create enough jobs to actually matter and to help the economy?
That's really hard to figure because that depends on how much the administration and Congress want to invest. The more resources you're willing to put into these areas, the bigger the bang would be. In some areas, like tax credits for employment, if that were actually enacted, for pretty modest sums, you could get some decent new job creation, enough that you'd notice.
And what are the chances of any of these plans actually getting through Congress and getting through the White House right now?
frankly, the Republicans have an incentive not to do anything because that improves their chances to win the White House in 2012. But given the seriousness of the situation and given how, that they may look obstructionist if they do nothing, one can imagine that there might be a few items that they can come to agreement on, like certain kinds of tax cuts, the payroll tax cut, maybe the employment tax cut. Then, of course, the other question is, you know, will they demand a very high price tag in return for anything like that?
And what do you think?
I'm a little skeptical right now, to be honest, but I suppose we should keep our minds open and keep our ears open and hear what happens.
Georgetown economist Harry Holzer, thanks so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Indeed, the lackluster economy will likely be the top issue in next year's election. So we asked, how is the economy going to be a year from now? From Washington, Marketplace's John Dimsdale got some opinions.
The president's own forecasters have trimmed their growth predictions for 2012.
It's going to be hard for President Obama to argue that he's done well on the economy.
David Malpass at Encima Global expects the economy will barely avoid another recession and growth will be too slow to bring down unemployment. He says all Obama can do is say the financial crisis was worse than anyone expected.
There's already this academic argument out there that recoveries tend to be slow after a financial crisis. So I think that's what he'll fall back on.
Malpass says there's a chance the economy could still take off. But Todd Buchholz, a former economic advisor to President George Bush, says it'll have to be soon.
This president needs the economy to look much stronger by the spring of 2012. By May of 2012, if it's not morning in America, it's good night for President Barack Obama.
A recovery that soon will be difficult. The White House is expecting the economy to grow at a rate of just 2.5% next year, with unemployment averaging a crippling 9%. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
As we witnessed last Friday, jobs reports continue to be cruddy. But in spite of one disappointing employment report after another, the markets kept going up and up until late July. Today's further swoon has us wondering if the markets are finally catching on. For more, we go to Julie Neiman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. She joins us every Tuesday. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Adrian.
So are the markets finally coming to terms with where the economy actually is?
Well, Wall Street's ever hopeful, but the biggest problem they're facing right now is this is not a double-dip recession because we've never emerged from the one that really started in 2008. One powerful area made us look much better than we were, and that was manufacturing, machinery, autos, aircraft, and it all went to the export markets. And our trading partners now are all plunging back into recession, so no one will be able to buy our stuff. That's what we're really looking at now. We're tied to Europe and China's health, and they both have a unique set of problems dragging them back down.
So some of the jobs proposals we're hearing, there are suggestions out there that basically count on and encourage consumer spending. Are those going to work?
Absolutely not. You know, bottom line is the Federal Reserve has a couple of dark tools they don't really want to use. But the only thing that's going to work at this point in time is basically jobs tied to manufacturing and infrastructure. 35,000 jobs are created for about every $1 billion spent on transportation. That's very effective. You've got a multiplier effect of 2 to 1. So in the president's jobs talk, he really has to talk about long-term competitive disadvantage that we're having if we don't upgrade our ports and highways and bridges. The construction trade is really the only thing that's going to bring this out. The problem with that, it's longer term. There's no short-term fix for the mess that we're in.
Julie Neiman is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thanks so much.
You bet.
All this week, Marketplace continues coverage of the breakdown, our economy one step at a time, with a special look at jobs and getting America back to work. By the way, you can check out the numbers anytime, whether they're jobs numbers, stock numbers. It's all at our website, marketplace.org.
Also, you can follow our show on Facebook and Twitter at Marketplace Radio. And I'm on Twitter as well, at Adrian Hill with one N.
And I'm at Radio Chio. That's with one D.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
With the 10th anniversary of 9/11 this Sunday, we're going to spend this week taking stock of the economic consequences of the terror attacks. Today, business travel. Now, you might think that 9/11 did major damage to the market, but turns out the attacks actually forced changes that made travel cheaper for business flyers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Of all the places to be on the morning of September 11, 2001, Salman Sredny was on a plane. He was flying from Florida to Chicago on business for the online trading firm TradeStation, where he's now CEO. Sredny overheard the guy across the aisle talking on one of those seatback phones. He asked him what was going on.
And he told me that the White House was on fire, the Pentagon was on fire, and the Twin Towers in New York were on fire. And I said, come on, that can't be for real.
10 years later, Sredny still flies a lot, but his employees do not. TradeStation used to bring its workers to its Florida headquarters 4 times a year. Now company-wide meetings are done by video conference, weekly ones too. Sredny gives me a quick demonstration with an assistant.
Did you get that package I sent you on FedEx?
Yes, I did.
TradeStation saves more than $1 million a year on travel by video conferencing. Sredny says the company would be doing business this way even if 9/11 hadn't happened, but he says the attacks sped up the process. 9/11 also brought about another big change for businesses. It made business travel cheaper. The disaster happened just as online travel bookings were taking off. Sites like Expedia created more price competition among airlines, and 9/11 scared people away from flying. Christopher Elliott is a travel blogger. He says 9/11 finally gave business travelers, who were used to paying top dollar, buying power.
Demand dropped off a cliff, and the few business travelers that remained were in a unique position where they could negotiate.
Sredny says there's something 9/11 didn't change, the need for FaceTime. His company was recently acquired by a Japanese firm. He's headed to Asia by air to do a little grip and grin with his new partners. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
For more on the economic legacy of 9/11, including archives of our shows from that afternoon, you can head to our website at marketplace.org.
Thousands of people are still stranded in parts of Vermont because of last week's flooding. One example, the only road between the city of Rutland and the resort town of Killington has been washed out. Commuters are now using an old hiking trail. From Vermont Public Radio, Nina Keck has the story.
Commuters with mud boots and travel mugs trudge across a half-mile trail in Mendon, Vermont, just north of the washed-out section of Route 4.
We're working in Pittsfield, trying to get the roads back up in shape.
Joe Bowen lives in Whitehall, New York, and is heading to his job in a small town near Killington.
A lot of people are, whether they work in Killington or other surrounding areas, they hike back and forth. The first day, there was a lot of people with suitcases and everything else tracking out of here.
It's an easy hike, but neighbors on either side of the trail haven't been too keen on all the parked cars clustered around the trailheads, so many residents are offering carpools to commuters like Bowen. Logistics can be tricky.
The only thing is you have to have somebody pick you up on one end, and you've got to park where you did on the other end. Probably my ride. Hello? That's Journey's End, right where she gets to the road closed sign. Take a right.
The makeshift transportation system seems to be working out so far. That's good, since road repairs may take a while. In Mendon, Vermont, I'm Nina Keck for Marketplace.
Well, the power is still out to hundreds of thousands of homes in the southeast, at least 180,000 in Alabama, after now Tropical Depression Lee continues to inundate the region with rain, wind, and even some small tornadoes. On the other side of the spectrum, fierce wildfires are causing big problems in parched central Texas. The fires have destroyed hundreds of homes and businesses there, and Kay Garcia McAnally is a city councilwoman from Bastrop, Texas. She owns a bed and breakfast in town, and she's with us now on the line. Hi there, ma'am.
Hi.
How close are you to the fires, and how close are those fires to Bastrop?
They're pretty close, but fortunately, we have a wonderful team on the ground from all over the United States now who have come to help out. So the line has been held, and we're very, very fortunate because so many houses in the county have burned, and so many people are displaced right now, but the city itself has been protected.
Now, you have a bed and breakfast there in Bastrop, right?
Yes.
How is your business doing right now and other businesses in your city?
since the drought, I can tell you the tourism has slowed down. It's been too hot. We've had over 80 days of 100-plus degrees
wow.
here. So all the grass was brown and burned, and it was just too hot for tourists to come this way.
How much do you think this is going to cost Bastrop and that part of Texas?
Who knows? We're still fighting fires here. But the governor has been down. All the papers have been filled out and documented and signed off, and FEMA should be here today. So with the loss of 600 homes, there will be a big dent in our economy here. But if the amount of help that we've already received keeps coming, Bastrop will rise again very quickly.
Bastrop City Councilwoman Kay Garcia McAnally, thank you for your time, ma'am.
You are so welcome.
London's Sunday Telegraph is reporting that 4 out of 5 British stores sell men's pants with a larger waist than what's on the label.
Oh, no, really?
So those 34s are more like 36s.
Uh-huh. That's what I thought.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The Telegraph is using the marvelous term for this, manatee sizing, instead of vanity sizing, a trend familiar to most
really?
Women.
They've got to, like, make anything with man, don't they?
Manatee sizing. I'm just going to say it all day long, Steve. It amuses me so much. Like this. Excuse me, shopkeep. Are those slacks actually 32s or are they manatee sized? Now the marketplace global perspective. Switzerland just announced it will begin pegging its currency to the euro. It's a dramatic move for Switzerland, which has seen the value of the franc skyrocket in recent months. Reporter Christopher Wirth has more from London.
We think of Switzerland as churning out nothing but chocolate and Swatch watches. But Switzerland actually sells a lot of other things that aren't as typically Swiss, with companies manufacturing everything from industrial chemicals to tiny screws used in German factories across the border. Or make that sold a lot. With countries in the Eurozone in turmoil, Karsten Brzeski, an economist at ING, says the Swiss franc quickly became a safe haven for investors worried about the stability of the euro. That sent the value of the Swiss franc soaring, and the cost of Swiss exports rising along with it.
Now we see that being a safe haven is not always a blessing for an economy, because we see that actually this strong currency really made the export sector suffering.
The move has already sent the value of the Swiss franc plunging, but there is a downside, namely that devaluing the currency will hit Swiss consumers with the opposite problem, inflation. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Well, back home in this country, today is the final day of voting in Coca-Cola's contest to help a financially strapped American park. The park with the most votes gets $100,000. And last we checked, Oak Park in Minot, North Dakota was leading with nearly 3.2 million votes. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins now on the business of online contests.
Sean Sipma is a news anchor at KXMC in North Dakota, where the town of Minot has rallied around Oak Park.
I know there are certain offices in town where they have the communal computers that people use, and one page is open at all times to vote for Minot.
The frenzy has even swept his office.
My co-anchor at the 6 o'clock, she was voting during the commercial breaks on the news.
Oak Park suffered millions of dollars in damage from floods this year, so it could use the money to recover. So could Sudan Underground Mine State Park in Minnesota, which was hit by a fire. And so could McGrath State Beach in California, which is slated for closure.
So a group of about 10 of us, you know, we would stay up all night long voting.
That's California resident Cindy Crawford, not the model. Coke allows people to vote as often as they want, and she says the site is faster in the wee hours. Beth Cantor is author of The Networked Nonprofit and has studied online contests.
What happens is usually these contests have a lot of money, and so it encourages people to kind of figure out how to game the system.
Cantor says for companies, that might not be a bad thing, because every time voters go online, they get a product pitch. Denise Mayer votes about 100 times a day for Oak Park. She says the voting has gotten her thinking about her favorite beverage.
I drink only Coke, not Diet Coke, the straight-up diesel Coke.
What else is going to fuel her constant clicking? I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
You know, while we're online, we're all familiar with .com, .org, .net, so-called top-level domains. Tomorrow, there will be a new one, .xxx. It's only for people and companies, and it is as risque as you might think it is.
I can only imagine.
Yes,
yeah.
Affiliated with the adult entertainment industry. But .xxx could cause headaches for those of us who aren't in the industry, Marketplace's David Gura explains.
Stuart Lawley runs ICM Registry. That's the company that's going to oversee the .xxx domain.
ICM's registry slogan is, "Let's be adult about it."
Back in 2000, Lawley was retired, but he couldn't resist a big opportunity.
It seemed clear that the internet and the consumer would benefit from a clearly identified space on the internet where users could choose to select or avoid adult content.
So Lawley applied for a license to operate a new domain. And he finally got it 11 years later. Not everyone's excited about .xxx. Christina Rosette is a lawyer with Covington & Burling.
I think it's probably fairly safe to say that no trademark owner outside of that adult entertainment industry community is likely to want their brand or their brands associated with the .xxx domain name.
There's a fear cyber squatters will register trademark names. Lawley says there's a safeguard to reduce that risk. A 50-day blocking period starts tomorrow.
Someone with a registered trademark who is not within the industry and doesn't want their name registered can apply to us. They pay a simple one-off processing fee, and the name is then permanently blocked.
But if a business doesn't fork over that fee, a couple hundred dollars, Christina Rosette says it may have to pay a lot more in the long run.
They're going to have to spend at least $4,000 or $5,000 minimum to get it back.
This is something millions of organizations will have to think about. And they're going to have to think about it again and again, because there may be hundreds of new domains next year. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally, the job market, Adrian, in this country, as we all know, is pretty bad at the moment. But that's not stopping one unemployed New York man from finding work as a street comedian. 26-year-old Jason Schneider tells jokes to people in Central Park for a dollar a piece.
Now, are they good jokes?
Well, we'll let you be the judge, huh? He has a money-back guarantee, by the way. If
so
you
they're
don't
guaranteed
laugh,
to be good.
If you don't laugh, he's going to give you your buck back. Schneider says he writes 20 or more jokes a day, hoping one or two of them will at least stick. Here's one.
Okay, I'm ready.
You asked for a joke. What do you call Chewbacca when he's working with Clay? Chewbacca, of course, the character from Star Wars.
What, Steve? What do you call Chewbacca when he's working with Clay?
Harry Potter.
I'll laugh at anything.
I'm doing the Ed McMahon look. Or click and clack. You know, that's a
right.
Car
we could just laugh the whole time.
I know we didn't pay anything for it. We didn't give a dollar to old Jason Schneider, but I want my money back anyway.
But
he should give us
we
money.
Laughed.
We did, but it
so,
was kind of a phony
so
laugh.
So we earned it.
Did we earn it?
I actually really liked it.
You really liked it? Oh, jeez. All right. Then I'll take my money.
No
give me a dollar.
For
how about
taste.
That? Since you laughed and I didn't, you give me the dollar. How about that?
All right. I'm Adrian Hill in Los Angeles.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Tuesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.